give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as The News and Observer, The Week magazine, The Independent, NewYorkTimes.com, ClassicRock.about.com, RollingStone.com, BGORecords.com, ClassicBands.com, and Entertainment Weekly.
When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live without me no more.
This opening number, The Letter, is brought to us by the Box Tops, and in particular, Alex Chilton, who unfortunately passed away recently of a heart attack, and he was just in his 50s. When he sang this song, he was only 16 years old, despite that gruff voice. We'll be hearing more about and from Alex Chilton later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions. Today's trivia questions are brought to us by RollingStone.com. Question number one. What was the last single released by Elvis Presley before his death? Was it A, My Way, B, Steamroller Blues, C, Burn in Love, or D, An American Trilogy? Question number two. Which of the following contemporary rock stars did not get their start on the Mickey Mouse Club? Was it A, Christina Aguilera, B, Britney Spears, C, Justin Timberlake, or D, Jessica Simpson? For those of us old enough to remember, this is also how Annette Funicello, among others, got their start. The answers to these two questions will be given at the end of today's program. But first, these transitions. Transitions is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com. Today, in rock history. And today is April 3rd and April 4th. What were the number one hits on these days? Well, back in 1961, you may remember, the Marcells with Blue Moon. And back in 1964, it was the Beatles with Can't Buy Me Love. And on April 3rd and 4th, back in 1971, it was the Temptations with Just My Imagination. Back in 1987, it was Starship, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. Back in 1992, this weekend, it was Bruce Springsteen's Human Touch. And finally, back in 1993, Depeche Mode, Songs of Faith and Devotion. Now, if you were born on April the 3rd, you share a birthday with Jan Barry. He was born on that day back in 1941. He's from Jan and Dean. And also Tony Orlando. He was born on that day back in 1944. Bless you. And finally, if you were born on April 3rd, you also share a birthday with Mick Mars of Motley Crue. He was born on that day back in 1955. Now, if you were born on April 4th, you share a birthday with Barry Oakley of the Allman Brothers Band. He was born on that day in 1948. And Craig Adams from The Cult was born on April 4th, 1962. Miscellany in rock history this weekend. Well, back in 1956, it was Elvis Presley appearing on the Milton Berle Show live from the flight deck of the USS Hancock. He sings Heartbreak Hotel, and it's estimated that 1 in 4 Americans see his performance. Back in 1964, this weekend, it was the Beatles taking the American single chart by storm, holding the top 5 places with Can't Buy Me Love, Twist and Shout, She Loves You, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Please Please Me. Back in 1969, this weekend, it was Jim Morrison turning himself over to the FBI in Los Angeles, charged with interstate flight to avoid prosecution on 6 charges of lewd behavior and public exposure at a concert in Miami on the 2nd of March, 1969. He's later released on $2,000 bail. Back in 1987 this weekend, it was Fleetwood Mac's Big Love hitting the chart. And back in 1987, U2 blast into the U.S. LP chart, making the highest debut of any studio act since Stevie Wonder did so back in 1980, as The Joshua Tree debuts on the chart at number 7. Back in 1990 this weekend, it was Gloria Estefan, who had been seriously injured when her tour bus had an accident, returns to Miami after undergoing back surgery. Back in 1996 this weekend, it was Jerry Garcia's widow, Deborah, and guitarist Bob Weir scattering part of Jerry's ashes in the Ganges River in India. And finally, back in 1996 on this weekend, it was rapper Hammer, formerly known as MC Hammer, files for bankruptcy. This final transition piece just arrived today, March 26, 2010, by Cliff Livingston of the Los Angeles Times. Title of it is Johnny Maestro, 16 Candles Singer with the Cress. He's 70 years old, or was, died. Performed the 1958 doo-wop hit 16 Candles with the Cress and enjoyed a decades-long career with the Brooklyn Bridge. He died of cancer this last Wednesday in Florida, according to Les Cucci, a friend and original Brooklyn Bridge member. Maestro was born John Mastrangelo on May the 7th, 1939, in New York City and grew up on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. He began his career in 1956 as lead singer of the Cress, an integrated doo-wop group that had a number 2 single with 16 Candles. The group also had success with Six Nights a Week, The Angels Listened In, Step by Step, and Trouble in Paradise. In 1960, the band's label, Coed, decided that Johnny Maestro should go solo, although the Cress still backed him. Under that designation, they had hits with Model Girl and What a Surprise before Maestro left the group. He later joined the Del Satins, who had backed up Dion with the Rhythm Method to form the Brooklyn Bridge in 1968. The new 11-member ensemble had a number 3 single with The Worst That Could Happen, a Jimmy Webb song. Maestro performed at arenas, amphitheaters, and casinos throughout the United States and Europe until earlier this year. In local rock news, we see this article by David Menconi, published in the NewsObserver.com on the 19th of March, 2010, entitled The Great Eight, Take 7. Some stories are harder than others to pull together, but there's no question about what takes more effort than any other music story every year. Great Eight local acts, our annual spotlight of bands to watch. This is the 7th year we've done it, and we're proud of the class of 2010, another wide-ranging set of acts from all over the musical map. But no matter what they play, they all call the Triangle home, and you'll soon have chances to sample them on stage. As for the groups recognized in the previous 6 years, check online at newsobserver.com to see an update on their doings, and keep us posted on acts we should keep an eye out for in 2011. Year 8 of our Great 8 era. These are neither ranked, this year's entries, nor are they presented in this order in the David Menconi album article, but here are, in fact, the ones that he listed. Dirty Little Heaters, Hometown, Chapel Hill, Sound, Furious Blues Rock Suitable for Garages. Second group, Mommy, Hometown, Raleigh, Sound, Rocked Up Yet Kid-Friendly. Third, The Love Language, Hometown, Chapel Hill, Sound, Lush, Yet Lo-Fi, Romantic Pop. Next group, Starmount, Hometown, Raleigh, Sound, Ambient, Pedal Steel Instrumentals. Next one is The Free Electric State, Hometown, Durham, Sound, Loud and Proud, but mostly loud. Next group, The Beast, Hometown, Durham, Sound, Cool, Ambient Hip-Hop. Next group, Lost in the Trees, Hometown, Chapel Hill, Sound, Whimsical, Orchestral, Wonderful. And finally, The Embarrassing Fruits, Hometown, Chapel Hill, Sound, Angular, Jingle, Jangle, Guitar Pop. Once again, these were the Great Eight, Take 7, listed by David Manconi for the year 2010. This next article by John Pareles was published on the 21st of March, 2010, NewYorkTimes.com, entitled Spilling Beyond a Festival's Main Courses. I will be skipping around in this article since it is quite lengthy. Austin, Texas, they came to play in clubs, churches, parking garages, conference room, clothing stores, backyards, and streets, from early in the morning to early the next morning. If anything could dispel the notion that musicians are slackers, it's the South by Southwest Music and Media Conference, 4 days of nearly nonstop music by performers known and unknown, many of them playing two or three times a day in hopes of, well, another gig. The 24th annual SXSW filled every available space in downtown Austin, with musicians clamoring for attention. Where that attention might lead, a live booking, a recording, a license for a song, an advertising tie-in, is less certain than ever in a music business that's struggling to sell recordings. But the corporate sponsors that swarm SXSW know that music draws a crowd, one that's treated as a market for just about anything except, paradoxically, recorded music. With daytime events that may now outnumber the official SXSW showcases in more than 80 locations, a lot of live music is also free here. The conference spilled through the streets in a frantic mixture of partying and deal-making, sustained by musicians' determination to be heard, regardless of the state of the music business. South by Southwest started in 1987 as a showcase for Texas music and mushroomed with performers from other regional and independent scenes, and soon from major labels. With those labels now imploding, multi-million-selling musicians are also grappling for attention. This year's SXSW included shows by Muse, Smokey Robinson, Jacob Dylan, and two bands making a new start, Stone Temple Pilots and Hole. Two-thirds of the Dixie Chicks, the sisters Emily Robeson and Marty McGuire, introduced their new group, Courtyard Hounds, with multiple shows. Hole's return, more than a decade after its last live shows with an entirely new lineup behind Courtney Love, was a glimpse of old-school rock stardom. In professionally noisy grunge rockers and newer power ballads, Ms. Love growled, rasped, and howled. Between them, she trash-talked and played diva, confident that the audience was fascinated by her. SXSW was and still is a place where undergrounds clamor for larger audiences, but this year the music they were making didn't sound so underground. It wasn't so long ago that indie rock, which dominates SXSW despite representation of Americana, hip-hop, metal, free improvision, and more, prided itself on being slightly elusive, deep enough to reward a second and third listen and a look at the lyrics. This year, catchiness was king, with few misgivings about being too accessible. Bands weren't counting on a second glance. Article skips down. Some of the most packed shows were by leaders of much-blogged micro-trend, variously known as Glo-Fi and Chillwave, Neon Indian, Washed Out, Small Black, Memory Tapes, Toro y Moi. They're solo acts or minimal bands, often with a laptop at their core, and they trade on memories of electro-pop from the 1980s, with bouncing, blipping, dance music hooks, and often weaker lead voices. It's a recession-era music, low-budget and danceable. No one can take in more than a small fraction of the more than 2,000 bands on the schedule, and the move toward pop immediacy that I heard could be a sampling error. But it may also signal an adaptation, instinctive or strategic, to an increasingly impatient audience, one with gigabytes of music in a pocket and countless other choices a click away online, and to a music market where recordings have diminished importance. A song licensed for a soundtrack or commercial, one way musicians still get paid for recordings, needs to register clearly and directly. The same goes for music heard live, as musicians' careers tilt toward performing rather than sales of recordings. Lingering over music, both in the recording process and as a listener, may turn out to have been a luxury from the album era, now disappearing. And while pop simplicity can be a fine corrective to self-indulgence, it can also grow shallow. The article then skips down. Frightened Rabbit, a Scottish band that brought a saving modesty to the surging anthems of Britpop, may have summed up the hope that brought many musicians to SXSW. Enough attention to keep making music. Oh, the loneliness and the scream, Scott Hutchinson sang, to prove to everyone that I exist. This next article, entitled Most Shocking Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Snubs, appeared on Talk ERR, published on the 16th of March, 2010, and downloaded from rr.com. Clearly, making it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has very little to do with popularity. The March 15th ceremony, ABBA, Jimmy Cliff, Genesis, The Hollies, and The Stooges each received their well-deserved induction. This honor is given out annually to inductees selected by a voting committee from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Foundation. Artists are eligible to be inducted 25 years after their first recording is released. But what's more interesting is the growing number of artists and groups who get passed over each year, despite record sales, reputation in the industry, and lobbying from fans around the world. Check out our gallery of snubbed rock stars. They include the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Journey, T-Rex, Bad Company, Cheap Trick, The Moody Blues, Rush, Chicago, Depeche Mode, Foreigner. Once again, keep in mind, these are all groups that have not made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the snubbed ones. And finally, Public Enemy, Bon Jovi, Heart, Peter Frampton, ELO, Alice Cooper, Hall & Oates, The Cure, and Kiss. This next article is from RollingStone.com by Daniel Kreps, published on the 17th of March, 2010. Big star singer and cult icon Alex Chilton is dead at 59. Alex Chilton, of course, is our featured artist today. Alex Chilton, singer and guitarist of Big Star, one of the most influential rock groups to emerge from the early 1970s, has passed away at the age of 59. Chilton reportedly suffered a heart attack today in New Orleans. Once again, that was back on the 17th of March. Just days before Big Star were scheduled to perform at the SXSW Festival in Austin, Texas. Chilton had been complaining about his health earlier in the day and was eventually taken to a New Orleans hospital, where he was pronounced dead. Big Star drummer Jody Stevens confirmed Chilton's passing. Memphis Commercial Appeal reports, "Alex passed away a couple of hours ago," Stevens said. "I don't have a lot of particulars, but they kind of suspect that it was a heart attack." Chilton began his musical career in his teens as a member of the Box Tops before returning to his native Memphis to form Big Star with guitarist, co-writer Chris Bell, drummer Jody Stevens, and bassist Andy Hummel. Blending power pop with the sound of the Beatles and the Beach Boys, Big Star were critically acclaimed but largely ignored commercially. In their short time together in the early 1970s, Big Star only released three studio albums. But what three incredible albums they were! 1972's Number One Record, 1974's Radio City, and 1978's Dark But Beautiful Third Sister Lovers, all placed on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time, and their classic tracks, 13 and September Girls, both made the 500 Greatest Songs of All Time. While they only lasted a few years, Big Star's impact continues to reverberate decades later. REM and The Replacements both named Big Star and Alex Chilton as major influences, and The Replacements, Pleased to Meet Me, features a song titled Alex Chilton. Chilton became a cult musical icon and artist as diverse as Beck, Wilco, Elliott Smith, REM, Cheap Trick, Jeff Buckley, Garbage, Bat for Lashes, and Whiskey Town have covered Big Star songs. Renewed interest in the band's music led to a reunion of sorts in the early 90s and a new album in 2005, In Space, which featured two members of the Posies, Ken Stringfellow and John Auer. Just last year, a box set celebrating Big Star's entire catalog, Keep an Eye on the Sky, was released. It's not like I'm a Big Star constantly getting noticed, but I do get recognized, Chilton told Rolling Stone in 2000. Of the fame that eluded Big Star during their first years together. What's nice is that the people in my neighborhood just know me as Alex. It's funny because I spent so much of my life moving from place to place, and I went through a few dark periods. But in the last few years, I've kind of settled down. Chilton is survived by his wife, Laura, and son, Timothy. So let's listen to a few snippets then from Big Star, Alex Chilton. We'll start out with In the Street. Then we'll hear a snippet from Oh My Soul. And then we'll hear a snippet from Back of a Car. Again, this is the title, In the Street. Now let's hear a snippet from Oh My Soul. Once again, that's Oh My Soul, now Back of a Car. Back of a Car. We'll end up today's program with Thank You, Friends. Once again, all these from Alex Chilton, a Big Star. In contemporary rock news, we see this article by Leah Greenblatt, a review of Justin Bieber's My World 2.0. This was published in Entertainment Weekly on the 19th of March, 2010. Bieber fever, the heady pop cultural delirium that seems to leave grown-ups untouched while sweeping every susceptible tween in its path, is now a full-blown epidemic, one characterized by shopping mall riots, twit-pick raptures, and generalized episodes of mass swooning. Its source, 16-year-old Justin Drew Bieber, has already racked up 150 million combined plays on MySpace and YouTube, and that's not even counting the weepy toddler video that recently went viral, a staggering figure by any measure. But the physical output of the Canadian export, with the gleaming teeth, pinchable cheeks, and swoopy, insouciant locks of a ready-made pop idol, has been limited so far to 1 7-song EP, last November, My World. Now, this full-length sequel in stores March 23rd won't likely affect any adults not in the direct blast radius of Bieber's target range. That said, the kid seems to know what he's doing. He plays drums and plays guitars, and he has co-written credit on each of the 20s 10 tracks, many of which cleverly update the sanitized R&B swagger of early days Usher and Justin Timberlake. Both, coincidentally, fought to sign him. Usher won. Airy, first single, Baby, has the sugar-high charm of mash notes and first kisses. Never Let You Go sounds like a fraternal twin to Chris Brown's Forever. But the best, by far, is You Smile, a shimmery slice of Hall & Oates-style blue-eyed soul. Bieber's voice is still high, clear, and sweet. When it cracks, that may be the day of reckoning. But there's real talent, it seems, under all that hair. Leah Greenblatt gives this a B and suggests downloading these, Baby, the Ludacris-assisted single, and You Smile, a sweet soul gem. That same issue of Entertainment Weekly gives us these reviews of contemporary albums. The White Stripes, Under Great White Northern Lights. This concert CD-DVD does a great job of highlighting both sides of the Stripes' carefully controlled public persona. Interviews in which Jack White plays the misunderstood artist are intercut with go-for-broke performances, and a wrenching final image humanizes the pair's relationship. If Under Great White Northern Lights is their last hurrah, it's one hell of a goodbye. And this is given an A by Whitney Pastorek. And he says, download these, Early Tune, When I Hear My Name, and Crowd Fave, Seven Nation Army. The Drive-By Truckers, The Big To-Do. This was reviewed by Clark Collis, and he gives it a minus and says, download these, Country Rock Heartbreaker, Santa Fe, and The Eyes Like Glue. The review says, what would these Southern rockers write about if everyone were rich and happy? Unfortunately, at least for DBT's creative juices, there's been no shortage of woe in the world of late, and The Big To-Do features some of the band's most evocative chunks of misery detailing to date. These include, fictional, Spousal Homicide, Saga, The Wig He Made Her Wear, and The Desperate, This Effing Job. The final review in this issue of Entertainment Weekly is Little Boots, and the name of the album is Hands. She's been called New Kylie and Little Britney, but UK sprite Little Boots thinks she's more underground than that. One video even finds her in a blacklist mini dress dancing with prostitutes, gang members, and homeless people. Still, musically, she's great at taking superstar glamour to the streets. It's mega club gold for the broke-ass rest of us. Melissa Mares gives it a B+ and says, download these, sequin-studded disco song called New in Town, and the synth-pop earworm titled Remedy. So how'd you do on the trivia question? First question was, what was the last single released by Elvis Presley before his death? Was it My Way, Steamroller Blues, Burning Love, or an American Trilogy? It was, in fact, My Way. Answer A. And which of the following contemporary rock stars did not get their start on the Mickey Mouse Club? Was it Christina Aguilera? Yes, it was. She did not get her start there. The others did. Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, and Jessica Simpson. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long.